Welcome, everybody, to the Local Hour. Big Suey is already up. Sometimes Big Suey's out first. Sometimes Local Hour is out first. Today's Big Suey is a good one, featuring Bomani Jones. They're always good when Bomani joins us. I'm joined now by the full shipping container and Dan and Stu Gatz. Happy Hump Day, everybody.
What happened?
That was Jamaican air horns with the Zoom going in and out while Chris Cody tried to support what Mike was doing.
Okay.
I was a little sad yesterday because yesterday was supposed to be game seven, but Tuesday Night Football was there to console me in its warm bosom, and I like Tuesday Night Football. Is it messed up that I'm rooting for more outbreaks so we can get more Tuesday Night Football?
No, I think we all are. I want Wednesday night football, Thursday night football, Friday night football, Saturday football, Super Bowl Saturday. I mean, the only thing I hate is Sundays.
I don't think there's Thursday night football this week, though.
What?
Wasn't it supposed to be Chiefs-Bills, but that you can't ask the Bills to turn around?
You can't really ask them to go Tuesday to Sunday either. Like, I would expect...
I think they're going Monday.
And what about the Titans? Are the Titans going Sunday?
The Titans are going Sunday, I believe.
I think these turnarounds are a little too fast on the human body.
No one's going to have sympathy for the Tennessee Titans, but the Bills we can have work up a little bit of sympathy for. But yeah, Titans, this is your punishment. You get two games inside of 5 days.
So the Bills play the Chiefs. There's a doubleheader this Monday again. I love this. 5 Eastern. It is Bills-Chiefs Monday Night Football, followed by the Cowboys and the Cardinals. How about that?
That's quite the slate.
Oh, my God.
Do you think in a copycat league that people are going to realize how fresh the Titans looked last night and say, you know what, maybe we should get the Rona. Maybe we should get 3 weeks off where we don't do meetings or colliding of any kind because they looked unbelievable last night. The Titans looked Tannehill looked like a better Josh Allen and super accurate, and the Titans manhandled a Bills team that's a little bit hurt but that we all know to be pretty good.
The Titans play the Texans, by the way, 1 o'clock on Sunday. The Titans team is good. They've been good for a while. They were a game away from getting to the game last year.
I'd expect them to lose against the Texans specifically just because Tuesday to Sunday.
It's a home game, just so you know.
I would expect them to not look the way they just looked with 3 weeks rest.
The Titans are, listen, they're a really good team. I don't know if that was an indictment on Josh Allen last night, and Dan had a small victory, although you said before we went on air here that you thought he played well, but the Titans are a really good football team. So I don't think that, you know, I don't know if that's a surprise. I don't think people want a copycat. I will say this, the Bills only had 2 practices over the last 15 days. I don't think people realize that, and one of them was a walkthrough. For whatever reason, they just did.
I don't think I want to look at that game yesterday and say, what did COVID have to do with this? I think that's far too easy because if this is under normal circumstances, one can certainly argue the game goes the exact same way. I think we're all just sort of realizing, okay, maybe the bottom's not going to fall out of this Tennessee team. They appear to be legit good.
It seems like we don't need practices or preseason games. Well, it seems like we could just play on Sundays and the product would be pretty decent.
It's interesting that you say that because, yes, except for the asterisk on everyone is hurt. All of these teams are missing players. And Stugat says, I don't know why you felt the need to argue with what was clearly a joke. Copycat league, they're all going to get the Rona.
I don't know either,
but
man.
Stugat's felt the need to say, I don't think they're going to copycat. So you don't think that they're going to actively be licking each other teams and actively be licking the homeless and people who are not wearing masks?
I don't. No, I got lost in the conversation. My apologies. I was saying something about the Titans being a game away from the game last year, and I just got lost in what it is that you said, and I responded in a ridiculous way.
I want to hear more from Billy. I need to hear more details on Billy's bowling escapades because the rosin bag.
I don't think the people that heard it the first time liked it very much. I got a lot of people telling me this hour sucks, so I'm not sure that they want more of my bowling stories.
I want to know what it is like to bowl with Billy Gill. I want as many details as possible. You shouldn't listen to the people, Billy. They complain about everything.
I don't care what they say. I'm just saying. I'm not going to actively, troll them.
I think you should, though.
They don't deserve my bowling stories, Dan Lebatard.
So you're going to keep your bowling stories from them?
No, you know what? Now they're going to get them because they don't want them. I don't know what I'm doing anymore.
Yes. So give me more details about how seriously you take it and all of the things that go into Billy Gill bowling night.
The year was 1996. A young Billy Gill and his sister were striking up the lanes at DCKL. That's Don Carter Kendall Lanes, for those of you who don't know. We were on a team together. Me, my sister, this kid, I think his name was Matt, another guy named James Cypress, I think was his name.
You still remember all the details from that evening?
Well, no, it wasn't an evening. We were in a league, Dan.
Ooh.
Bowling league. It was the off season of baseball, and we were looking for a sport and something to keep us busy on Saturday mornings. So we started bowling. I had a blue ball. The interior was like reddish, had my name on it.
Nice.
And I had like this little this hand thing that you would put around your wrist. I don't know what it did, but it was kind of like a, it wasn't like the thing like Barry Bonds would wear. It was kind of like a cheaper version. It almost looked like the wrist guards that you would wear when you're rollerblading if you're being extra safe. It was like that. I think.
May I ask a follow-up here? You were wearing something, but you didn't know what it did? Like, did you?
Well, it was for my wrist.
Right.
It's kind of like sweatbands. What do sweatbands do, technically? I mean, they keep your sweat from getting to your wrist when you're playing back. Like, get out of here. It's just for fashion. That's why I was wearing it.
Well, they keep the sweat from getting to your hands. But but that thing, what that thing is it keeps your hand, your bowling hand, in the proper position, just so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
I'm an expert. That's what it is.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is when Stu Gods comes in with his expertise, and now you can imagine him being a solid 290 average bowler.
Yeah. So we were on a Saturday morning bowling league at DCKL, and we won back-to-back championships. I have the trophy somewhere to prove it, and that was that. I don't really have many stories. One time I bowled like a 160 when I was like 10 or something, and it was because I was going to be sick. Or no, I had something the following Saturday. So what you had to do, Dan, back in the day, is if you're going to miss a week, you had to bowl the week early, but you got to bowl it by yourself, and you just go back and forth switching lanes. DCKL was great because it had a lot of lanes on each side. It was like a massive – it was almost like a Costco, but with bowling alleys. It was kind of crazy, and it was really popping. That was like the place for G's, as Chris would call it. That's where they would go bowl on Kendall, you know, back in the day. But then I guess people realized I don't have to go bowling anymore, and then they closed that, and now it's like a CVS or something.
So you said you were a back-to-back champion. I want to know about that second season when you're walking into the lanes for the first game as the champion. Yeah. Are people looking at you like, oh, look, there's Billy and his sister, the champs?
Well,
he's got that glove. He's got that glove thing. I mean,
well, no, I didn't. I didn't have the fancy one. There was like hard plastic ones that had like a finger that would go out also to keep your fingers straight. I didn't have that. I had a very basic one that was just went over the wrist. It almost looked like I had a sprained wrist, really, with the guard that I had. That's the guard I had. It was me and my sister. And then one year we had James Cypress. And then another year, I think we had a kid named Zach. And then we had Matthew, who was a bit of a tag along, if you ask me. He was not really doing a ton for our team scores. He would get like 40s and 50s, but his family seemed nice. So we kept him around. He kept it like, it was like one of those things, you know, when you sign up for baseball and it's like, oh, well, there's a draft. And it's like, well, I carpool with, you know, Gregory. So Gregory and, you know, Chris Cody have to be on the same team because they carpool together. So even though Chris might be good, you have to take Greg because they go in the same car. It was one of those things. He somehow finagled his way in with management, and they put Matthew on our team again, which I was kind of like, we could do without Matthew, but I guess he's going to be on our team. It's fine. We'll overcome this. And that we did.
Can you tell me
second straight? What?
Can you tell me the story of your bowling ball bag?
It was a basic bag that came with the ball. I think the company was Score or something like that that made the ball. It wasn't anything fancy. I wasn't a shiny, you know, a shiny object kind of guy. Just, you know, meat and potatoes kind of guy. I got the ball that I needed to get the job done, and that I did. I could find that ball somewhere, I think.
I mean, you're a champion.
Two-time, back-to-back. Yeah. Wish we could have gotten that three-peat. It would have put us in elite company.
Are you a hoarder? Like, do you have things, a lot of things like that from the past? I know you're a bit of a hoarder here when you're here, but are you a hoarder at home as well?
No, I mean, I just figure that it's probably like in a shed somewhere or something, because I don't think that you could Where do you donate a bowling ball to? Like, have you ever gone to a Goodwill and found a used bowling ball that says Billy on it? Probably not.
giving the theme to the people, Stugatz. The people here don't want much of this. Keeping with that theme of giving people what they don't want, two Mike Ryan items from this morning that were funny. One, I came in here and I was pointing at him and waving at him,
yeah.
And I couldn't get his attention, even though he was 5 feet from me, because he was hypnotized by Dominique Foxworth talking about the Browns on television, and he was arguing with the television, and that was only slightly less annoying than all of his hurricane opinions.
So, right.
We've got plenty of hurricane football opinions for you from Mike, and also some bonus Cleveland Brown opinions.
Great. Yeah.
Well, the Cleveland Browns thing bothers me because we don't know if they're for real yet, because look at the teams that they've beaten. We don't know if they're good, but you can't do that earlier in the season because the Cleveland Browns are responsible for like 30% of those losses. We don't think the Cowboys are good specifically because they lost to the Cleveland Browns. We don't think the Colts are any good anymore. Why? Because they just lost to the Cleveland Browns. They keep moving the goalpost on the old Cleveland Browns. So they're going to have to go into Heinz Field and smack those dudes up.
They're good.
Hit them upside the head. Not literally, Miles, but hit them upside the head.
They're going to be playing catch up
at Heinz Field.
Hey-o!
That's good.
No, I like it. You stand by that. All right, so here's what I got on Canes.
Are you done with the Browns?
Yeah, because okay. It's a local hour.
Right.
So Canes obviously coming off a disappointing performance. A lot of people set their expectations sky high. My expectations were, let's find out what this gulf is and see if it's possible we can close it by year's end.
Can I just say this? I still think the Colts are good. Sorry.
I appreciate you.
You got it.
Phillip Rivers, though, bit of a problem.
The Colts defense is good.
Very good, yes.
They were missing Darius Leonard, which is, when we were talking about great middle linebackers, you can put him atop the list, and they were missing him. So you can pull Coles in the Cleveland Browns.
And you can put Myles Garrett now. Like, there's maybe Bosa's in this conversation, but it's Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald, and Myles Garrett in terms of unblockable forces.
He's been brilliant. He's a legitimate. They're talking about a just straight-up MVP candidate. Now, the Cleveland Browns defense isn't very good, and I promise that I was done with Browns stuff, but no one's defense is very good anymore. If you have a player that can force chaos the way that Myles Garrett does and give you turnovers, that's what's really good about defenses now. The league is designed for offenses to put up a million points. Force turnovers, force chaos, blow plays up, and Myles Garrett does that. But to the Miami Hurricanes, I have not rewatched this game. I don't wanna. I was very disappointed with it. That game was over early on. Now, I did anger some people with the Miami Hurricanes football program, and I know what I was doing when I sent this tweet out, because it was a little unfair. A Clemson blog jumped on a quote that Manny Diaz gave inside the U, and here's the actual quote for context, okay? I'll go ahead and say it. The headline on the Clemson blog was, Manny Diaz says, only inches separate Clemson and Miami. It's very unfair what the Clemson blog did, because what Manny Diaz was trying to say is, look, we were a couple inches offside in that early drive, and those are the inches that separate the team. So he kind of said it, but it got blown out of proportion. And I knew that when I put it out there.
His point was that his player was in a position, first of all, what happened on the play was unusual in that you got an interception from a guy who was offside.
Yeah.
Or what looked like an interception, because he actually dropped the ball.
Roche.
It was fourth down. Roche, that's right. Their professional defensive end lined up offsides and drop back into coverage.
Which is, you rarely see the guy
right,
with the interception.
Correct. That is correct.
Who drops back
into
coverage.
It was a throw down the field. It wasn't a screen pass. The guy who was offsides dropped back into coverage. That's pretty dumb. Yeah. And they would have gotten the ball back, and instead Clemson scored.
It's dumb, but Manny feels like he's just a couple inches away from being as good as Clemson, because that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
But he's saying it's unfair as
Did he rail against a blog.
What Mike said?
I don't care what Mike said.
No, is the answer, yes. Chris. He doesn't.
Here's a couple inches away.
I found the full quote. They got their first 14 points off of that, the Roche thing. Now, part of the play that Roche nails is because he's showing deception. You could show deception
without being offside.
Offsides. It was a harsh lesson for us, but one we needed to learn, Diaz said to the media. Quincy was offsides by 3 or 4 inches, and that was it. Those are the inches that separate the two teams. I guess if you put stock into, I mean, those were backbreaking penalties. Keep in mind, there was a holding penalty on the Amari Carter targeting, and he kind of got nudged into him. And so, all of a sudden your offense becomes even more predictable. You're down 14. They've had the ball for an entire quarter, it feels like, and you just have no shot.
But also all of their players are better than your players.
For sure.
Well, that's
for sure. And now I did listen.
By inches, though. By inches.
I listened to a really good podcast for like Canes people that want rational analysis. And I'm one of those that likes the irrational and rational. Through the Smoke said there was actually a pretty clean pocket for De'Ara King in the second half. But all we remember is every play getting blown up. Wide receivers, terrible. Worst crop of wide receivers at the University of Miami. No real answers.
There's
no
not a playmaker them. Among them. It's crazy.
No one's there to push them. Peyton. People are upset because Brian Hightower transferred. I don't really see how any of these people really help. You just have to ride this out and hope your tight ends can carry you. We were throwing 50-50 balls, and those are not 50-50 balls with this receiver. Those are really like 75-25 balls. And Clemson dared them to make plays, and we did not rise up to the challenge. And our tight ends, who you would think could exploit blitzing linebackers, the best linebacker on the field, the best tight end on the field, actually played for Clemson that day. But that leads us to the game on Saturday against Pitt. Pitt, you could argue, even though they're missing their best defensive lineman, has a better defensive line than Clemson. They have one of the best safeties in the country. This is a great defense at Pittsburgh. Miami is favored by 10.5 points. The Miami I've known for the last 15 years finds itself in an absolute dogfight on Saturday. Because they face adversity, they're not front-running anymore, and here comes a team that's going to punch you in the mouth, and you're going to stroll out there and expect, because you're wearing the orange and green, that they're going to lay down for you, and it's every ACC loss we've ever had. I'm putting money line on Pittsburgh. I think this is the biggest game in Manny Diaz's career right now, because he has to show it's a different Miami. No one's expecting you to be as good as Clemson this year.
A different Miami goes into Pitt and blows them out.
They're at home.
Well, I'm sorry. So a different Miami blows Pittsburgh out this week.
Why blow them out?
Just win.
Just win? Because I feel like they're a lot better than Pittsburgh.
I think this game is going to be
tight. But maybe just a few inches. I mean, I don't know.
Pittsburgh lost to NC State. I don't know about anybody. I don't know about them being a lot better than anything in the ACC. They certainly haven't been over the last few years.
We know that they're nowhere near as good as Clemson. And that's fine. That is honestly fine. They're a national title contender. They haven't lost a home game in 4 years. No one's expecting to make that jump. I think we were all hoping for a better performance in Death Valley. But dust yourself off, handle your business, and show that you're among the class of the ACC. There are no divisions this year, I believe, in the ACC. So you already need help. You need Notre Dame to lose in order to get to that ACC championship. If Manny Diaz is saying inches separate us from a game-changing play, I can buy that. I don't really see a team that can hang with Clemson, but they need to continue improving because good Miami teams improve game over game. Pittsburgh is a massive test for them.
Mike, I'm asking because I don't know. They lost to NC State. They lost to BC. Pittsburgh did last 2 weeks, each game by a point, so close games. Are either of those two teams any good?
BC's got a tough defense, and NC State, if you want to circle a game that might be a loss on Miami's schedule, it's NC State coming off a bye for Miami, which has always been problematic. Here's Manny Diaz once again as a double-digit favorite at home. He's lost two of these straight up. He's got to win this game.
Do you find yourself missing guys like DJ Dallas and Jeff Thomas?
I miss Jeff Thomas, even though there wasn't an adult in that room. It is a massive indictment, and he's a good player, and he's playing for the NFL. I think he's like the number one punt returner for Minnesota. But for KJ Osborne to come from the University of Buffalo and be head and shoulders the most responsible and trustworthy wide receiver at the University of Miami, coming in from Buffalo, that is a massive indictment.
It was really startling to me, Stugatz, in terms of watching Clemson against Miami, how little respect Clemson in general had for those receivers. The reason that that offensive line that had been so good earlier in the season kept getting blasted is because they didn't have to respect anything from those receivers, so he could just keep sending linebackers from all over the place because he knew the defensive coordinator for Clemson simply knew that he was going to be able to, in one-on-one coverage, didn't have to bother with anything in terms of coverage other than just throwing his cornerbacks and his safeties out there.
You see the specific plays. I mean, these are game-changing plays. I know people wanted a flag on that ball to Wiggins in the end zone saying that the corner got nudged. You got to be stronger than that. On the 50-50 ball that's purposefully underthrown to Mike Harley, you got to come back and fight and grab that ball. De'Ara King made like one bad throw. to Will Mallory.
But it's just, it's the terrible combination of they're not that physically big and they're clearly not faster than the people they're playing against. Like, it can't be both of those things.
Harley has great straight line speed. There were people that wanted to see races between Harley and Jeff Thomas at practice. Mike Harley, every week I hear how, man, this guy had an amazing practice. Not at all a gamer. He's got one game for the University of Miami that you remember. It just is what it is with Mike Harley. You need someone to step up at that position. And I just don't think the answer is on this roster right now, because the only people that can push these guys outside of Peyton, true freshmen. You can't count on true freshmen. If they were good enough, they'd be on the field. However, this is the same staff that played Greg Rousseau 10 snaps against Florida, so who knows?
Stugatz, explain this to me. Why would you expect Miami to be blowout better than any of the other teams in the ACC, given that since they've been in the ACC, basically, right, save for a year, they've been all the other teams in the ACC. You can't make the argument. It's only history that they have. You cannot make the argument that Miami is all that much better than Virginia, than North Carolina. Well, it's not better than North Carolina this year.
I'd like to know when we're going to arrive at that, because that, to me, you're not going to be Clemson every year. You're not going to win the national championship every year. But being back means you're going to beat those teams every single year. The Canes, when they were playing football at the highest levels, would never lose to teams like that. They might lose to Florida State, but they'd never lose to Pitt.
But the difference was those were championship contender teams that usually had the best players. It was obvious watching that game between Clemson and Miami that Clemson is what you remember of Miami. They've got all those players now, like, in a way that's just indisputable. Like, you're watching the field. It's rare to see in a game between programs that you would assume are in the same place historically,
right,
where you're like, wait a minute, one of these teams does not have the athletes to be on the other, on the field with the other.
Clemson's an NFL factory. You would think if they're losing so many good players to the NFL, occasionally you'll catch them at a weakness where, okay, we don't have guys as good. Maybe it's linebacker for Clemson, even though those linebackers had an awesome game against the University of Miami. Miami's playing whack-a-mole. Oh, shit, we need to fix the punter. All right, got that. Got this Australian who's tatted up. Oh, shit, we need to fix the kicker. All right, got that. Oh, no, there's a mole with the wide receivers now, and we're just constantly trying to plug all these holes and new ones pop up. It takes time to build, but Miami usually checks out when they lose one of those embarrassing games. And a game like Saturday usually goes the other way. And I'm terrified about that, because for Miami to truly be different, they need to say, okay, we'll get you next time, Clemson, and dominate their opposition. They've never done that in the ACC. For Miami to be back, they just need to be in the national college football playoff conversation.
They did it once, and then they lost to Pitt. They lost to Pitt.
And they lost to Pitt. Yes. They still had an opportunity to punch their ticket to the playoff, and what happened against Clemson on Saturday happened in that ACC championship game. Get to the ACC championship game. Have that be the one loss on your record. If you are truly back, you're in the national conversation. You can get back in there. But I have very little faith that Manny Diaz and the Miami Hurricanes can just take care of business against Pitt. If they do, that's honestly more encouraging than covering the 14 against Clemson for me.
What is a third covering the 14? What is a third option?
Beating a 3-2 team is more impressive than losing by 14 to the number one team in the country?
Yes.
Yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah. I mean, 14 is a massive spread. And you're on the road to a team that hasn't lost in 4 years. But given Miami's track record within this ACC, how they've only made it to one ACC championship, two, but they technically self-penalized and never actually made it up there. They always lose these type of games since they've entered the ACC.
But you expect they always lose the Louisville game too, and this year they won it with a bunch of big plays that fooled us into thinking they're faster than they actually are. If we're trying to actively troll and annoy the audience, and Billy has gone in with a bowling story that he says no one wanted to hear, and Mike did the double homer of Canes talk and Browns talk, what is the third thing we could put in front of the audience just to ruin their breakfast experience? What is a third topic? Does anyone have one? Does anyone have a third topic that we could actively annoy the audience with?
There's an NHL free agency. We can get Roy involved. We can talk Florida Panthers. We can talk about how Victor Oladipo and Giannis Antetokounmpo are both coming to the Miami Heat.
I don't know if this would annoy the audience, but I can make make an argument the Dolphins have a good shot at winning the AFC East.
Louisville's 1-1 and they're ranked 18th in the country.
It's so confusing, this college football season.
Well, Stugatz,
they're 1-3. They lost at Pitt.
Stugatz, just curious. I'm simply curious. Because you say everyone is awful. Pitt is awful. Louisville is awful. No, UAB is awful. Tell me who's good. Go ahead and tell me the teams that are good. Because the whole Big 12 is bad. So go ahead and give me the list of teams that are good.
Clemson and Alabama.
That's it?
That's it.
And everyone else is bad?
Yep.
Okay, good coverage.
The Bachelorette started last night. Tony and I could do a rundown of that.
I watched. All right, so I've got three seasons under my belt of The Bachelor and Bachelorette. It seems as though I always catch the bad ones, but this one seems excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you kind of know what's going to happen because of all the tabloids and stuff, so it's just you're waiting for it. So it's kind of a different, unique season because she quits or finds love early or something. Spoiler alert.
She leaves. It's a Bachelorette film during the pandemic. So if you leave the Bachelor bubble, you're breaking protocol.
But I think she leaves with one of the dudes. She's like, I don't need this whole competition. I know I love this guy. We're out of here. Like,
really?
I think
that's, is that what happens?
Yeah. I mean, not to spoil it for you, but that's, sorry.
$5.
I'll take over from there. Thanks.
Yeah, you got that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So Claire ends up leaving with somebody else who she had a relationship with before the Bachelor bubble.
Oh my God, for real?
Yeah, for real.
So someone that's not even a contestant.
So it's not Dale?
She says, Dale, how many times? Wait a second. She says several times in this first episode, I know my future husband is in this room. So her future husband is someone outside the bubble?
Is it a different state?
Different state, possibly. From the rumors that I've heard, it was somebody that she had a relationship prior and then went into Bachelorette thinking she was going to find love. And then all of a sudden she's like, you know what? I actually like the guy that I liked before all of this stuff.
I assumed it was the guy she gave the first impression rose to because they're setting it up as if...
The first impression rose, Chris. That's story number one that they're going to try to rope you in on. It's never who you least think. It's always the middle-ist.
That Dale, though, is he just the perfect human or what? I mean, geez.
The first impression rose is like trusting your gut, right? That's all it is. It's a gut pick, no? Because I would totally leave with my first impression rose, and that would be it.
It's like getting a win against like an Appalachian State early in the season.
Got it.
It's like,
okay.
They look good, but you know what? I can't trust them later on in the season.
Can we please stop and imagine Stugatz on The Bachelor?
Let's go ahead.
I would have crushed it, he says, of course, because his thoughts on everything is I would crush it. I want you guys to imagine, like, how many lies are being told? How gross is the entire...
I'd be married.
Stugatz, absolutely be a polygamist. I'll take seven of you. I'll give you one rose here, and I'll make six side deals with the rest of you.
I'd bring someone back that already kicked out.
All right, my sources are telling me that the first impression rose actually went to the person that gave that she had the relationship with prior to the Bachelor bubble. So I misspoke on
so
that.
I'm right.
So yeah, you're right.
I knew it. See?
With the coughing and the phlegm, you kind of threw me off.
Well, what was the sound? Chris, explain to us what happened there, because soon after Tony started talking, you just let out a stray, and I thought it was because yesterday you said the G's call it O-hop, and what was the other mistake that you made yesterday? Instead of crisscross applesauce, you said Indian style.
I was proud after the show of the G's thing because it was, you know, it just came to me. It was natural. I didn't plan it. I didn't pre-plan it.
Beautiful.
It just happened.
Yeah.
But so that one I wasn't embarrassed of because it was just ridiculous. But the, you know, I need to be better about the crisscross applesauce thing. That's a couple of years now. That's not a new one.
But what happened
That noise was me just finishing off the bit of me clearing my throat. Like I had something in my throat. So Tony started talking. He gave me a little window and then I was.
So it wasn't frustration because I thought it was just frustration at being bad at this.
That was me clearing my throat.
Again.
bad at this. Yeah.
Attaboy.
What other local topics are there other than The Bachelor, which is a strange... Billy, yeah. Are you into The Bachelor at all? Do you? Because everyone got very excited about this. No. And I, for about 5 years, I've been walking off of the set of Highly Questionable every time they ask me if I'm interested
it's
in The
Bachelor.
It's
the same show every season. I mean, it's always the biggest season. It's always the biggest surprise, the bang.
Obviously, you guys don't love love. Dan, you need to throw a curveball.
It's not love, Chris.
Well, that's the thing.
You guys don't watch the show. It's obviously love. Dan, you need to throw a curveball and like just break it down hardcore next time they bring it up on HQ. Like do it, like change up for that bit and just like have everybody's name, have it like just like full breakdown.
We can give you the stats, you know, Dan. We can give you all the takes and then all of a sudden you can just furnace blast them with it.
Wait, I want to hear Billy's thoughts on this because I think he agrees with me. This is not love. I think of all the seasons of The Bachelor, only one couple remains together, and that was the first season. Which is crazy.
I don't think that's right.
I think it's right.
Yeah, that's no, I think that's right. Right.
I mean, go fact check it. Someone have fun going down that.
Everyone disagrees with you on this, and you don't know anything of what you're talking about. You. All you know is that you would have crushed it if you'd been The Bachelor. Like, Stugatz, how are you always so comfortable talking about things that you don't know? Everyone who is on this call, who has watched the show, everyone says he's right.
Thank you. Don't stick together. They're not really looking for love, most of them. I mean, maybe sometimes some people are looking for love, but the vast majority are looking to be famous, right? Like they're looking to be influencers. So they're not looking for love. The thing that I have with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette is that, one, the episodes are way too long. It's like 2 hours long or something. It's like I can't dedicate 2 hours to be watching The Bachelor or Bachelorette every week. It's too much for me. And two, I kind of just want people to shoot straight with me, right? You're not looking for love. You're just looking to hook up, right? So why do we need to class up this whole thing? Because then I'll see some of those people that go on to the dating shows that I watch on MTV, and they are not at all classy. They are not at all looking for love. They're showing them for their true colors. And I'm like, this is what I want to see. Sincerity. People that are just trying to hook up that have absolutely no interest in falling in love whatsoever, and they just want to be famous on television, and it's just going to be some trashy dating show, and I know what it's going to be.
Instead of watching the sterling pedestal, like, you know, on a different pedestal of Bachelor and Bachelorette, you watch the shitty versions of them on MTV.
No, I watch the real versions. You're watching like the fake fruit that's like on display that you bite into and you like chip a tooth. That's not what I'm interested in. I want to see the real thing. I told you earlier, Stugatz is like me. We're meat and potatoes kinds of guys. We want to see things how they actually are. We want to see these people not interested at all in falling in love, jumping through hoops, having ridiculous eliminations, not presenting a rose. The thing about The Bachelor is that it's been cleaned up so that it gets presented to, you know, your mom, and your mom's like, oh my God, I can watch this. This is just young people looking for love. Where that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the truth. I want to see these people for who they am, as Stugatz says.
Billy, but there was two contestants last night. You got that juicy, like, bottom of the barrel drama last night with one contestant.
Yosef?
Yosef was like spitting game and he was killing it. And then Tyler C walks up. He's like, yo, that guy was Instagramming messaging a bunch of girls. You need to watch out for him. And she was like, I got to get both these guys together. Is this true? And then she eliminated Tyler C and she kept Yosef, the DMer. Man, see, Billy, it was juicy.
I'm with Billy on this. And I have a theory, even though I am not an expert on The Bachelor, because I am with Billy on the idea of they are absolutely selling the mythical, we see this in sports all the time. They're selling the mythical purity of love to an audience. The next step I would go on this is to an audience that is consuming network television, which is about as dumb as it's ever been. Like network television, which used to be the only thing that existed, is now the thing that gets consumed by plenty, but you've got a lot of audience that is watching crappy, crappy network television.
I mean, 30 years of The Bachelor, it looks like 8 couples are still together. One is hanging on by a thread. One is engaged, but they're in no rush to get married. Well, that's what it says here in this article I'm reading.
30 seasons?
30 seasons, years, seasons, whatever. But Trista and Ryan Sutt, they're still together, and that was the original couple. They are still together, married, and going strong. It does say one of the couples of the 9 that are still together is, it literally says this, hanging on by a thread.
Wasn't there a season where the guy literally picked no one? It was like the last two people, and he's like, yeah, I choose none of them. And it's like, okay, so you were in this for love.
But that's real. People. He didn't find love. Okay, Billy, so he should just pick one? He's like, I'm looking for love. I haven't found it. Not taking anybody. That
he
is
was not
real
looking for
life.
Love.
Real
he was not
love.
Looking for love.
If he's not looking for love, why didn't he just pick anyone? Why didn't
he wanted to hook up with 30 people.
But he was down to two at that point. He could have just picked one for the show for the fake love. But he's like, no, this is not fake. This is real.
And the other thing with Billy saying that people want to hook up, they can't really hook up and like have sex until the fantasy suites.
Yeah,
of fantasy course. Suites. That's the other issue.
That's like real life. Just like real life. I took my wife on three dates before I got to go to the fantasy suite. All right?
Why is everybody yelling? Way too much information.
Yeah. The difference I'm also with Billy. I think they're hooking up.
Oh, so naive. You guys think they're not having sex all over that house.
I mean, back to Dan real fast. Dan, okay, we're not all watching Netflix documentaries, all right? Sometimes I just want to turn on ABC and watch what I want to watch, all right? Don't judge me.
I was judging network television. I wasn't judging
you.
You're
judging all of us. You were.
Network television has given us Holy Moly and The Masked Singer, Dan. Yeah.
If you're watching CBS or NBC or ABC, you're dumb. I'm smart. I'm on Netflix watching documentaries.
That's not what I said, but it's what I meant.
You got to go to the other places to get documentaries. HBO. You know, Amazon Prime.
Amazon, Hulu, yeah.
HBO. Different places like that.
I'm telling you, Netflix sucks me in on just about every show.
Yeah, they have a good knack of doing
it. It's like a body of water with some trees that have no leaves on them. And like a, yeah,
that's
and,
every and, Netflix
and,
show.
And some girls like halfway sinking. That is. I mean, it gets me every...
That is the title credits for every Netflix show ever. A body of water and some trees.
Trees with no leaves.
A drone coming in to show you it from afar.
And someone is, you know, there's someone in the water and they're halfway down.
I think that's just the start of Bloodline.
So good.
They
Netflix.
Are a bit formulaic now in that way. Body of water.
Well, that's what The Bachelor is. The Bachelor is formulaic. They know exactly the how to grab time. The people.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I love that. You go to Netflix. We tailored this just for you. Our selection's for you.
These 17 shows featuring a body of water and a tree with no leaves on it.
They also, by the way, The Bachelor and The Bachelorette incentivize contestants not to find love. Because if you find love, then your Bachelor / Bachelorette / Bachelor in Paradise career is over.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you don't find love, then you can come back a following year and you'll be the star of your own season.
They have so many contestants and stuff. They don't need somebody to not find love.
Oh,
they have plenty of
Chris.
People they can put on Bachelor in
Chris,
Paradise.
Chris, I guarantee.
I'm done with it. Tony, let's go. Let's ride into the sunset. Let's defend the honor of the Bachelorette.
Don't fall I will say this. The game changed from when Stu got to saying that the earlier contestants were together. Social media was the breaking point between the old way of Bachelor and Bachelorette and the new way, right? Because now you get on, you start having a couple dates, people see you, people like you, all of a sudden you get kicked off, and now you're an Instagram star.
Yeah.
Like, that's the formula. If you want to talk about a formula, that's the one.
Yep. And Bachelor in Paradise, where they're not really looking for love, they're looking for spinoffs.
That's where the fun is at.
So they're doing the spinoffs, and then next thing you know, they have a special on Monat on their Instagram, and you're swiping up.
Are you guys arguing that network television isn't dumb?
Oh, here we go again. I mean, Jesus.
I mean,
60 Minutes, Dateline,
Monday Night Football,
CBS, boom. Sunday Morning,
no, Mom, 40 seasons of NCIS,
Bob's Burgers.
Okay, so you are arguing that. That's what you guys are arguing. Okay.
Yeah, Law and Order SVU.
The best.
The biggest show in the world was about science, Dan. Big Bang Theory.
Well, that one's probably not. Yeah,
science.
Man, anything Chuck Lorre does is just like, this is not for me.
I mean, some of the greatest shows ever are network TV. West Wing, X-Files, 24.
Whoa. I'm not saying what network television was. I'm saying what
Dynasty.
It's become, and now your comparative options, if you want Amazon, if you want HBO, if Showtime, if your options are smarter. They're smarter options.
Well, do they have Murphy Brown? I mean...
Boom. CBS still doing Murphy Brown?
I think they brought it back for a minor run. Where network TV is behind the eight ball is when it comes with the TV drama, because they can't really stack up. Grey's Anatomy tries, but I mean, they can't do the things that Netflix can. They can't do the things that cable shows can. So you're like, why am I going to watch a drama if it's not going to feel 100% real life? Like, Jack Bauer's got to say the F word at some point, right? But he doesn't.
Guillermo, what is the poll question as it regards this? Is network television good or is network television bad? Like, what is the question? So I'm not contaminating the jury pool so we can find out whether the audience sides with me or you guys on this.
What network TV does better than anybody, I think, is news. Because cable dramas are great, cable news is toxic and it just puts you in a terrible mood. Network TV knows, for the most part, how to just put this out there. You decide. We're not trying to make you angry this morning.
But it's been left behind. Like, that style of television.
Well, because people want it instantaneously. Why am I going to wait till the evening or the morning to get my news?
It's not just that, though, Mike. It's because people seem to be craving echo chambers. When you see that Tucker Carlson's numbers are better than the NBA ratings, mm-hmm. and you see that Trump specifically is... And because they're not going to debate in person because of the coronavirus issues, now he's having a town hall opposite Joe Biden's town hall.
Yeah.
What you've got is just people will go to the thing that reaffirms their belief. That's what you've seen happen to the news. It's the genius of Roger Ailes. It's the genius of Fox News. They saw the Trump stuff before anyone else saw the Trump stuff, and they created a news empire from, we don't want facts. We want someone who aligns with our opinions.
Yeah, people just want to hear other people agree with their own opinions. Yeah, that's problematic. But I've gotten away from it, and I'm really enjoying watching what network news does.
I do like down the middle news.
I haven't, it's not even so much like down the middle. It's just, here's the story. And it's just like, oh, we're not going to go to a quad box right now and hear some person yelling at another person. It's just story, moving on, next story.
You decide what to do with that story.
We're just moving on.
I don't like deciding what to do with the story.
But Stugatz, when you look at what happened to network news, think about how you used to trust your news anchor. You used to trust whoever it was, Tom Brokaw, Brian Williams, Dan Rather, Ted Koppel, whoever your guy was, going back before that to Cronkite and everyone else. Now, what is it? You trust the guy who's giving the opinions that align with yours. That's what's happening.
Whether or girl.
Or woman, yes. Although news anchors, when you talk about news anchors, those tend to skew
male. Well, Fox News has the Ingram angle.
I'm talking about in terms of history's trustworthy anchors. Yeah. That's been male-dominated.
Yeah, Katie Couric was a famous flop. Right.
Yeah. Who do you trust now? Is there...
I think
Lester Holt?
John Oliver.
I think institutions, the ones that Mike was talking about, CBS Morning... the morning magazine program on Sundays and 60 Minutes. Those are good news shows. Also, the nightly national news, whether I trust the anchor or not, it is fact-based, and Mike is right, that the network news remains smart.
I don't know who to trust. I mean, once we lost Brian Williams and Matt Lauer, I'm not certain who we should trust. I don't know. Like, it sounds good in theory. Okay, there are a couple of people out there I should trust, but I have no idea. I mean, I thought Matt Lauer was squeaky clean.
It's funny.
Brian Williams, like, still doing it?
He is. Brian Williams
CNBC.
He's on MSNBC. I feel bad for the shifts that Brian Williams has. It's like Friday night at midnight.
He's lucky to have any shifts, Mike.
Yeah.
I
understand.
He burned all of his trust and credibility with those fighter stories, those war stories he was telling. Like, that's part of what happened. A lot of these guys proved to be human. Dan Rather, we respect around here a great deal. Dan Rather has some mistakes in his past in the efforts to do journalism. You've seen what's happened to Matt Lauer. Whatever trust it is we had in these people is eroded because of some of the things they did.
Is he on the rehab tour? Is it like the same thing for coaches? Like, can he ever get back to NBC? Like, Lane Kiffin had to go to FAU to get back to Ole Miss. Like, is he going to MSNBC to get back to NBC?
Nah.
Never? It will never happen?
Lester Holt's not letting go.
Oh.
Lester Holt's not young.
Yeah, but I bet you his age is comparable to Brian Williams. Brian.
I think of him as older just because his name is Lester Holt.
Yeah. He has to be older.
Let me find. Guillermo,
Roy's
great at these games. Roy, without looking it up, who's older, Lester Holt or Brian Williams?
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Oh. Are we still making Lester's?
I think Lester Holt is older.
How old do you think Lester Holt is?
63.
He's 61 years old. Now, how old do you think Brian Williams is?
58.
65.
61.
50.
Tied. Same age.
Yeah, but Brian Williams has that Anchorman sheen.
Who's older?
That veneer.
Wow, Andrea Mitchell is 73.
Well, May 5th, if you really want to get technical on Brian Williams, and Lester Holt was born March 8th.
Mm.
Lester by a nose.
That. I was right.
The Weakest Link is back.
Oh, I love that show. It's so great.
Jane Lynch is perfect.
She's awesome.
She was born to play this role.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Got a bunch of game shows coming back. Will Arnett, I think I saw, was hosting one. Wait, maybe.
Isn't that the Lego one? I think the Will Arnett show is the Lego show.
Bill, have you watched Weakest Link yet?
No.
That's really good. It's good.
I've got one last sports top.
It's the same as it was when it left.
Got one last.
Really? But is she mean enough to be the host?
Yes, she's very good.
You know what? I'm switching back to Dan's side. I think Dan's right. Network television sucks. They're bringing back Supermarket Sweep 40 years after the fact.
Oh, that's going to be good.
What's going on here?
I feel bad for the original host of Supermarket Sweep. I looked up what he's doing now. He's hosting like a live version of The Price is Right in Las Vegas. Seems like they should have just given him that job when he came back, right? How long is that show going to last on network TV? Like a season? Why not just give the guy his job back?
I'm going to guess what Mike Ryan's sports topic is without knowing it.
Okay.
I'm going
to
guess.
I have one last local sports topic that I'd like to get into briefly.
I think it's how much Victor Oladipo likes putting Miami in his Instagram stories.
His geotags. I did want to get to that. And now I'm just looking at Nigerian ties with Oladipo, Bam Adebayo, and Giannis Antetokounmpo. But, I mean, this is an Eastern Conference championship team. That's a national topic. This is a topic that we can only tackle locally. Ryan Tannehill, guys. Ryan Tannehill looks to be really good. Ryan Tannehill now with 28 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions and a 16 nice completion percentage in 16 regular season starts since leaving Miami. That comes courtesy of Barry Jackson. How?
I don't have an answer for you. What I would say is I always thought Ryan Tannehill here was an above-average starter who was betrayed by all of his help, management help, skill position help. But here is something for you if you believe that Stugatz's beloved Adam Gase was the problem. This is from Scott Barrett, DFB. Ryan Tannehill with Adam Gase, 89 passer rating. Without Gase, 115.4, leads the NFL. Robbie Anderson with Gase, 10.1 PPR, 55th in the league in 2020, this year with Carolina. He's with Carolina, yes. 18.2 PPR, he's wide receiver number one. Devontae Parker with Gase, 8.1 PPR. Without Gase, 15.1, wide receiver number one. Le'Veon Bell with Gase, 13.5 PPR. Without Gase, 20.9, most ever. Most ever. Like, those are, you know, those are the advanced stats people telling you that there are a whole lot of people. It's not your eyes lying to you. There are a whole lot of people who've gotten better when Gase isn't in their life.
It's not just that with Gase. I mean, it's Sam Darnold has not improved under Adam Gase. It's a mess.
It's,
I mean, Jamal Adams, Le'Veon Bell, Robbie Anderson was just terrible, killing it for Carolina.
It's funny how it turned for Adam Gase, because his credentials were, look what I did with a close to washed Peyton Manning. Look what I did with Tim Tebow as my quarterback.
He did get to the playoffs one year here.
Look at what I did with Jay Cutler, and look what I did with Josh McCown. And now it's an indictment on him as to what he can do with talent. It just turned on him, and not very quickly either. He's had lots of chances, and there are rumors that he's going to get other chances.
Here's a stat from Bill Barnwell. Stugatz says the Jets waive Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell, when he went to the Jets, we were talking about him as the best running back in the league, the most valuable running back in the league.
Correct.
Since the start of last season, Bell has averaged 3.2 yards per carry, which ranks 48th out of 49 backs. As a receiver, he has averaged just under 7 yards per reception, which is 125th out of 132 players. He has been worse than a replacement-level running back, and you are paying him over 17 games, excuse me,
yep,
for 0 100 yard rushing games, for no one, for what do you think is the longest run of Le'Veon Bell's Jets career. This is what you paid $27 million for.
Hasn't been. I can't remember a really. I can't remember a single play that Le'Veon Bell has made. I'll say he's had to at least rip off one 45-yard run.
19 yards.
Oh.
19 yards. Mm-hmm. One 19-yard run in 17 games. $27 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think Josh McCown had his good year under Trestman. I didn't want to take anything away from the Tampa Bay Vipers head coach.
Remember Trestman? He was the quarterback whisperer.
Well, Mark Trestman was Gase before Gase on Hank Goldberg's
show. Remember Hank Goldberg? Yeah. It's word association for me.
It is. I think of Mark Trestman. I think, well, but we've been that for Stan Van Gundy. He's going to get another job.
Well, I think the big news is that the Pelicans are moving to Lake Mary.
Wow.
Yeah, he's going to coach him by Zoom from his tiny boat. He's going to, that's just what his retirement needed. More LeVar Ball.